Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Another little publicized war involving the indiscriminate killing and torture of people, now in the Nuba Mountains of southern Sudan in northeast Africa, is our topic in this edition of Radio Curious. Our guest is Professor Samuel Totten, a genocide scholar based at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. He was last in the Nuba Mountains of Sudan in January 2011, conducting research for a new book, Genocidal Actions Against the Nuba Mountains People, Interviews with Survivors of Mass Starvation and Other Atrocities. I spoke with Dr. Totten in his home in Fayetteville, Arkansas on June 13, 2011, and began by asking him to describe the situation in the Nuba Mountains of Sudan.
There are a number of things going on in the Sudan right now. The Darfur crisis continues unabated. The Darfur crisis has been going on since 2003, in which the government of Sudan attacked the black Africans, the Mazlit Four and Zagawa, in Darfur, and have committed approximately 400,000 plus deaths in that region. At the same time, over the past several years, the United Nations, the United States, Sudan, and other nations have been involved in bringing about the comprehensive peace agreement between the North and the South. There was a 20-year war from approximately 1984 through 2004, in which some 2 million people died. The South was fighting for their freedom from the North, and the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, or CPA, was signed in 2005. More recently, a referendum was put up for a vote in January 2011 to allow the people to decide whether they wish to remain with the North or to secede and become their own nation. And the referendum overwhelmingly showed that the people wish to create their own nation, and that will become official in July 2011, and the new state of South Sudan will come into existence. Now, at one and the same time, the past 2 weeks, the government of Sudan has attacked the Nuba Mountains, which is in the state of South Kordofan, and it is basically carrying out attacks exactly the way it did in Darfur, that is using Antonov planes to bomb the villages, towns, and farms. They sent in troops to attack the people on the ground, burn the farms, and chase the people out of the region. There are various reasons why this is being done, but some of the more astute political analysts believe that it's because President al-Bashir wishes to firm up his control of South Kordofan and the border between the North and the South as he continues to try to negotiate the best deal over a place called Abyei, which is an oil-rich region, which is still up for grabs.
So that makes it sound like the political issue is access to oil.
In part, that is true. There's another part in play, though, as well. Just recently, the past month, there was an election for governor in South Kordofan. There were two candidates. One, Ahmed Haroun, who used to be the head of humanitarian affairs for the government of Sudan. He was allegedly responsible for many of the actions in Darfur throughout the early 2000s.
When you say, Sam Totten, the actions in Darfur, can you describe those?
The people of Darfur, since about 2003, suffered what has been referred to as a scorched-earth policy carried out by the government of Sudan.
Which basically means kill everything and burn everything.
That's exactly right. The height of the killing was in 2003, 2004, and 2005. basically what happened is that the government of Sudan would send in Antonov bombers to bomb the farmland and then send in Janjaweed, which are Arab militia, and they would come in on horseback and camels in the hundreds, 200, 300, 400, 500, and they would attack a village and kill people, rape women and girls in the fields, and then systematically burn down the villages, loot anything they can, and then government of Sudan troops came in land cruisers, attacking people, and at the same time, the wells were poisoned so that the people, if they came back, they would end up dead, and many, 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 many hundreds of thousands of people fled, and currently, there are over 2 million internally displaced people in Sudan today, living in very, very rough conditions. And there are approximately 275,000 people living in refugee camps in Chad, which is adjacent to the Darfur-Sudan border.
And you're saying that this is the same thing that's going on in the Nuba Mountains in another region of Sudan?
Yes, virtually the same actions are being undertaken with some differences. In the Nuba Mountains right now, instead of the old Antonov Russian planes being used as bombers, they're flying in and bombing, but the government of Sudan has also sent in jets to bomb. Also, what we haven't heard in Darfur, currently in the Nuba Mountains, soldiers and militia are going door-to-door in some of the bigger towns, for example, Kadugli, which is the capital of South Kordofan, and in a town called Diling, which is about 125 miles away from Kadugli, going house to house in search of members of the Sudanese People's Liberation Movement / Army. And when they found them in Kadugli, they executed them on the spot. And when they found them in Diling, they sliced their throats, executing them on the spot.
How were they identified?
They're identified either by name recognition. Many men in the Nuba Mountains, South Kordofan, have sent their families up into the mountains, and they've put back on their military uniforms. They used to be with the SPLA during the 20-year war I mentioned, so they're being identified that way, and I guess just on the suspicion that the individuals are members of the SPLMA. In many cases, they could be wrong, and they could be executing people who have nothing to do with that organization.
Is the presumption then that the desire is to execute people who are in political opposition to the government of Sudan on this issue?
That's exactly right.
Let's define genocide, if you would, please, Sam Totten.
Yes, well, genocide, according to the UN Convention on the Prevention and Punishment for the Crime of Genocide, which was passed by the United Nations in 1948, describes genocide in this way. Genocide means any of the following acts committed with the intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, an ethnic, a racial or religious group as such. And then there are five groupings under that. A, killing members of the group. B, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. C, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. D, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group, and E, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. That is what genocide is, as in contrast to, say, crimes against humanity or ethnic cleansing.
In looking at the national newspapers here in California, including the New York Times, for the past couple of days, I see no mention of this issue. Why is that?
Well, there was an article in the New York Times on Saturday, but it was in back pages, and it was actually written by a fellow named Gettleman, who I've been sending emails to about this case, and I assume that he has his own sources as well. And he's actually getting ready to head down to South Sudan and then maybe up into the Nuba Mountains. But my sense is one, most people are not following what's happening in South Kordofan. That's number one. Two, there are certainly few, if any, reporters in the Nuba Mountains right now. And over and above that, I think that most reporters who are focused on Sudan are focused on the Comprehensive Peace Agreement and the fact that there's tension between Khartoum and the new nation of South Sudan. Then over and above that, of course, the Arab Spring and what has been taking place in Libya, Syria, Yemen, Egypt, Tunisia, all across that region. I think most reporters are focused on that. And then, of course, we've got Iraq and Afghanistan. So it's very low priority for anyone at this point in time.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Dr. Samuel Totten. He's a genocide scholar based at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. He has specialized his studies in genocide and was in the Nuba Mountains of Sudan in January 2011, conducting research for a book that he is preparing called Genocidal Actions Against the Nuba Mountain People, Interviews with Survivors of Mass Starvation and Other Atrocities. Sam, it's an ugly story that you are telling. You've described atrocities. You also mentioned mass starvation. What's that about? How's that being carried out?
Let me clarify. The book that I'm in the process of writing is not about the Nuba Mountains today, but it will become about the Nuba Mountains today. In fact, the book is about the genocidal actions that were carried out by the government of Sudan against the people of the Nuba Mountains in the early 1990s. The government of Sudan went into the Nuba Mountains to clear the region of supporters of the people of the South who, as I mentioned, were fighting for their freedom and after 20 years finally gained that freedom and are establishing the new country of South Sudan. But what the government of Sudan did is they went in and they basically carried out a scorched earth policy, exactly the way they have in Darfur, and instead of simply going after the rebels, they went in and burned all the farms. They forced the women and children and the elderly up into the mountains where, away from their farms, where there was no food and no water. And the people were forced to stay up there months and months and months at a time and ended up resorting to eating leaves and roots. And many people starved. Many people became very, very ill from eating poisoned plants and roots. And periodically, people would go down to their farms, but the farms had been destroyed, virtually burned to the ground. And so people had no food at that time. Today, the parallel is the starvation has not set in yet because we're 2 weeks into this conflict, but my sources tell me in the Nuba Mountains that towns and villages have been cleared out and the people have sought sanctuary up in the mountains. Their farms have been destroyed, just as they were in the 1990s, and now the people are going to be up in the mountains away from their food sources, away from water. So if this conflict continues unabated for months, we may end up seeing exactly the same situation that we saw in the 1990s in the Nuba Mountains.
Tell us about the leaders of the government of Sudan, who they are, and what their role is in what you have been describing.
Sure. The president of Sudan is Omar al-Bashir. He's been president of Sudan since 1989. He was in the military, and he headed up a coup d'etat and took over the government of Sudan in 1989. And because of the atrocities that were perpetrated in Darfur, He has been charged by the International Criminal Court with both crimes against humanity as well as genocide. Now, the individual who was head of humanitarian affairs, which an ironic title in light of what he did, his name was Ahmed Haroun, worked hand-in-hand with President al-Bashir, and was very involved in overseeing the atrocities that were carried out in Darfur, has also been charged by the International Criminal Court with crimes against humanity and war crimes. In fact, the charges against him amount to over 40 charges. Ahmed Haroun was appointed governor of South Kordofan by Omar al-Bashir. Just this past month, there was a new election in South Kordofan for governor, and there were two individuals who were running. Haroun ran again, and he ran against Abdul Aziz, A-Z-I-Z, who was a very popular commander of SPLM troops during the 20-year war. Now, interestingly, the Carter Center, headed up by Jimmy Carter, which is well-known for monitoring elections, was actually in South Kordofan monitoring the elections and basically stated that the elections were fair. The people in the Nuba Mountains contest that, saying that most of the people in the Nuba Mountains were in favor of Aziz. And when I was there in January 2011, there was one rally after another calling on Haroun not only to step down as governor, not only not to run again as governor, but to give himself up to the International Criminal Court.
In no way to sanction what they're doing, but rather in a way to compare Ahmed Haroun and Omar al-Bashir to other known alleged war criminals and proven war criminals, what comparisons would you make?
Well, as listeners may know, an individual named Mladic, who was a general in the Serbian army during the crisis in the former Yugoslavia, was allegedly responsible for the massacre, which has been deemed a genocide by the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, which is different from the ICC, as a case of genocide. And there were individuals who have been found guilty of taking part in that genocide in Srebrenica. Mladic was just arrested. He is now at the ICTY in The Hague. They are going to try him on charges of genocide and crimes against humanity. And I would say that he and al-Bashir and Haroun are of the same ilk. As most people know today, there's also a war going on in Libya between Gaddafi, the president of Libya, and individuals who are fighting for their freedom. And I believe al-Bashir and Haroun, in fact, I know al-Bashir and Haroun have killed many, 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 many more people than Gaddafi. And I mean, the numbers of people alone in Darfur that Haroun and al-Bashir are responsible for range as high as 400 plus thousand people. And now they're attacking the people in the Nuba Mountains. And then, of course, there was the war in the south where 2 million people were killed. There's virtually no comparison. These two individuals are genocidaires, as the French put it, guilty of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes, and need to be tried for this as soon as possible.
And these two are Ahmed Haroun and Omar al-Bashir.
That's correct.
Earlier in our program, you described genocide. We know that the United States, to some extent, and the United Nations have protested genocide. What are those two bodies doing?
In regard to the Nuba Mountains, not much. The UN does have a very small mission in the Nuba Mountains. It's been there for a good amount of time. They were not placed there because of this crisis. In fact, I actually met members of the UN mission in Sudan when I was in the Nuba Mountains in July 2010 and then January 2011. For example, in a town of Tauda, I'd say that there were probably five or six UN personnel, soldiers. They basically drove around. My sources tell me right now that the UN soldiers are basically observing what's happening. They are primarily resorting to staying in their compounds. In Kadugli, hundreds of people approached the UN compound seeking sanctuary and were rebuffed and told to head to Dilling. Now, these people were on foot. Dilling is 125 miles away.
Why is there so little action by the United Nations forces in this area?
I'm not exactly sure, but a conjecture is this, is that they do have a mission, a much larger mission in Darfur, but that has been hamstrung with the mandate they have. Their mandate does not allow them to engage in battles if they see people being killed. Supposedly they're...
Say that again. Their mandate does not...
allow them to engage in battle if they see people being killed by the government of Sudan.
What is the role, then, of the UN mission?
Basically, it's come down to observation and reporting on conditions in Darfur.
Then let me shift to the other leading international body from the perspective of some, and that's the United States government. What is it doing in response to this, either at the executive level or the foreign affairs level in the House and Senate?
Right now, as far as can be ascertained, President Obama has made various statements, and they've appeared in newspapers across the United States and Europe, decrying what is happening in the Nuba Mountains and calling on al-Bashir to cease and desist. Any other actions than that, nobody seems to know if the administration is doing anything. As far as Congress, there is one individual who has stepped up immediately, and his name is Frank Wolf. He is a U.S. representative from Virginia. And on Saturday, he wrote an appeal to President Obama calling on him to contact immediately former Secretary of State Colin Powell, who was very involved at the time when he was in office working with al-Bashir and the government of Sudan. Wolf asked President Obama to send Colin Powell to Khartoum to try to reason with al-Bashir.
Do you think that would get anywhere?
Not likely. Al-Bashir seems to do what he wants when he wants. Here's an individual who's been charged with crimes against humanity and genocide for Darfur, and nobody's tried to arrest him. Basically, he continues to lead his country the way he wants, and when he wishes to kill, he kills, and that's that. What I'm in the process of doing is I completed a draft of a letter to all members of Congress calling on them to contact President Obama to threaten sanctions, though that probably won't do any good as well, but also to contact the UN, asking them to beef up their UN mission and to establish a no-fly zone so that it would prevent the Antonovs and jets from coming in and bombing, and thus allowing humanitarian aid to be flowing in, food and medical supplies and water for the people who are hunkered down in the mountains.
Well, Sam Totten, I appreciate this opportunity to visit with you. And I wanted to go back to where we began, and that is genocide. And it's sometimes called ethnic cleansing. Can you compare those two terms?
Yes, unfortunately, ethnic cleansing and genocide are not one and the same. You're absolutely right, though, that ethnic cleansing has been compared to genocide. In fact, many individuals in the media and elsewhere throughout the 1990s used ethnic cleansing as a synonym for what was taking place in the former Yugoslavia. Since then, individuals have used it as a synonym for genocide in regard to what's taken place in Darfur. Ethnic cleansing is forcibly moving people out of an area, whether it's a town or a region. And that can be done in many ways, obviously. People could be threatened that they're going to be attacked and then they'll flee, or force can be used and people could be beaten, shot at, tanks could be brought in, planes could be brought in to drop bombs, to frighten the people, to terrorize the people, and then the people leave in droves.
So a distinction between genocide and ethnic cleansing is genocide includes killing and ethnic cleansing means getting people out of here.
But I was going to clarify that point. Now, ethnic cleansing can morph into killing because there have been instances where a government wishes to cleanse an area of the people, to rid those people that it looks askance at, to get rid of them. They have used violence to accomplish that. The situation in regard to genocide is this, and it's the reason I emphasize certain words when I gave the definition. In genocide, there has to be the intent to destroy in whole or in part. If, in fact, when ethnic cleansing takes place, there's the intent to destroy in whole or in part a group of people, whether they're national, ethnic, racial, or religious groups, that then becomes genocidal and can be deemed genocide.
Well, Sam Totten, I want to thank you for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, I have two quick questions. One, is there in your life experience a eureka or an aha moment that has stuck with you and influenced you?
Yes, it certainly has, Ben. And probably the most memorable is the year after I graduated, I was an English major. I was raised in California. I decided to move to San Francisco. I would go into Lawrence Ferlinghetti's City Lights bookshop. Every evening I would go in and read. Well, one night I went in there, and there was a magazine, and splashed across the cover were the words, "Torture in Chile." I ended up reading the article. It was by a woman named Rose Styron, a very well-known human rights activist, the wife of William Styron, the very well-known novelist. And she basically talked about torture in Chile, and I'd never heard about how ubiquitous torture was in the world. At the very end, she mentioned Amnesty International. From that point on, I became a human rights activist, moved to Australia, worked for Amnesty International, and over the years gradually moved from human rights into the field of genocide studies. That was a revelation. That was an aha, eureka moment for me.
And is there a book that you could recommend to our listeners?
Yes, not to be immodest, but I've just had a book published by Rutgers University Press. It came out in March. It's in paperback. It's called We Cannot Forget. The subtitle is Interviews with Survivors of the 1994 Genocide in Rwanda. I worked on it for 2 years, and the interviews are incredibly powerful.
Professor Sam Totten, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you very much for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
Dr. Samuel Totten is a genocide scholar based at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. He was last in the Nuba Mountains in January 2011, conducting research for a new book, Genocidal Actions Against the Nuba Mountains People, Interviews with Survivors of Mass Starvation and Other Atrocities. The book that Dr. Sam Totten recommends is one that he wrote and was just published, entitled We Cannot Forget, Interviews with Survivors of Genocide in Rwanda. This interview with Dr. Sam Totten was recorded on June 13, 2011. All editions of Radio Curious are free for anyone, anywhere, to listen, download, and enjoy. There are about 400 archive editions on our website, www.radiocurious.org. You may subscribe to our podcast at our website. Our email is curious@radiocurious.org. Snail mail is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, UKIAH, California, 95482. And the phone is 707-462-6541. You've been listening to Radio Curious. Christina Anastad is the associate producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.